Hi, have you heard about Bitcoin? Not Bitcoin, but Bipcoin. Bravo, India, Papa, Coin. Bipcoin is a new cryptocurrency that you can start mining today for free on ordinary computers. Unlike most altcoins, Bipcoin is not a clone of Bitcoin. Bipcoin is based on entirely new, more recent, and better code called CryptoNote. So unlike Bitcoin, Bipcoin has truly untraceable transactions, does not require specialized mining rigs, and has adaptive limits. Plus, Bipcoin is the only cryptocurrency covered by the BIPCOT no government license. This allows use and reuse by anyone except governments and government agents. If you're still kicking yourself in the head for not getting in on the ground floor of Bitcoin, start mining, using, and trading Bipcoin today.
Not a guarantee.
Mining Bipcoin costs you nothing but the electricity to run your computer. And we already take Bipcoin for stickers and buttons. Go to Bipcoin.org. That's Bipcoin.org. Once again, that's Bravo India Papa Coin.org.
All right, here we go. This is the Zombies Government and You podcast, where we subvert and ridicule the state while having a damn good time doing it. And I'm David. I'm here with Baron Von Stormhaven.
Yo.
What's up?
No, I'm all right.
Oh, dude, I'm doing well, brother. Bright and early. I'm not used to podcasting this early in the morning, but I'm digging it. So, it gives me a reason to have a beer at 8:30.
Nine.
Whatever the hell time it is.
What? You're in Phoenix, right?
Yeah, AZ, baby.
Fuck yeah, that's home state.
Yeah, that's where you're from, right?
Yep. I was going to ask you before we started getting into anything deep, I want to ask, like, where part in Phoenix are you? Like, you in Phoenix proper? Or
no, like, East Valley.
Okay, so you one of the burbs, or are you actually in Phoenix?
No, one of the burbs, yeah.
Which burb?
Mesa.
Oh, you in Mesa. All right, yeah, no, yeah, so I grew up in Tempe, so.
Yeah, dude, I love Tempe, or I used to. I don't get down there much, man.
Yeah, it's like. Do you know, are you familiar with the southern area, like Southern Street?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so you know where Southern McClintock's at?
Dude, I used to, this is funny, man. I used to deliver pizza from a place there.
Yeah, okay, so Southern McClintock, that's the major street. And then, what is it, Los Feliz? It's like the street it's east of McClintock.
Okay.
I lived right up there. I lived across the street, literally, from McClintock High School. So, yeah.
Right on, man.
Yeah. So, are you from Arizona or?
Yeah, man. Born and raised.
Born and raised? Fuck yeah.
I'm one of the few, it seems like, you know? You always hear.
Well, shit, dude. You haven't been to Vegas where everyone here is like a transplant.
Yeah, must be kind of similar.
Well, no, it's really awkward because everyone here is either from California or from maybe Utah or, you know, back east. Rarely did I see any. Well, you'll get some transplants from maybe California in Arizona, but not as many as Vegas.
Oh, yeah. Sorry, I'm messing with your volume here. So.
Oh, that's fine. Just
there we go. That looks good.
Do what you got.
Do it on the fly. Cool, man.
Oh, yeah. Doing a lot, man.
So before we get too in-depth, I want to remind everybody that the ZGY podcast covered by the BIPCOT, no gov license, precludes any use by governments. Learn more at BIPCOT.org. And we're being brought today to you by Discord. We tried to get Fiendphone up this morning, but no luck, man. So we'll work on that in the future.
Oh, yeah.
But Discord's a good little backup or substitute, I think.
No, it's a great substitute. It has great audio levels, so I've never been unhappy with what we've put out on the Lulberts with Discord.
Yeah, that's we should mention that too, man. You're one of the co-hosts of the great podcast, The Lulberts, with Jim Jesus.
Yeah, I'm the asshole of the whole Lulberts thing, so you know that works itself out.
There's one in every group, man. You know.
Yeah, but I'm more like the angry asshole. It just like, you know, says fuck it. You know, I'm gonna call you out regardless. So.
See, I like that role, man. You know, I'm like that too a little bit. But I think when I'm like running the show, I have to, you know, pull it back a little bit and focus on.
Well, that's right. But
what's going on there?
You're actually, But if you're actually aware of your own position, it is quite alienating. So, like, I mean, I can completely alienate myself from what's left of the so-called libertarian movement right now. And yeah, I wouldn't care. I wouldn't give a fuck because I don't know. I mean, I've been okay. So I work at Amazon, and in January, because I work at the return center for Amazon, we just had our busy season.
Oh,
so
yeah.
I've been working like 60 hours a week. So I've had little time to know what kind of social bullshit has been going on with the libertarian movement or the ANCAP movement or whatever. The only thing I've seen was something from Brian Sovereign today saying that ANCAPs have either, you know, gone full Trump or nothing at all. So can you explain that to me? Can you tell me what's been going on?
I get as involved with it as I can, but you know, yeah, it's crazy, man. It seems like there's this large segment of that section of the Liberty movement that's basically eschewed any kind of, and I'm not speaking for anybody, but it seems like they've kind of abandoned a lot of those principles for convenience or because Hillary was so odious, you know. I don't get it. But you know, to be fair, he's done some. I'm not going to defend Trump. The Orange Emperor, the God Emperor has no clothes. But
no, he is yet to be emperor. He has not crowned himself emperor, which would probably happen in about a year or two, depending on how things turn out.
Yeah, you need a bigger. You know, you gotta have some kind of crisis first, right? Never let a crisis go to waste. So
right. So
maybe
work,
save that for year two, not the second week.
No, I've met a couple of people libertarian leaning or, you know, quasi libertarians at work, and you know, so they asked me about Trump. I'm like, look, America, we've been sold on soft fascism because of corporations and government and whatnot kind of being hand in hand. And now we're seeing more of the overt fascism and people are getting scared. I'm like, why? Because yeah, we've been so used to, you know, soft fascism that hard fascism is all of a sudden new.
Yeah, it's like incrementalism, right? It's our
boiling
frog analogy, you know. Correct. Just been raising it by degrees, but now they're just ratcheting it up.
Well, the mask's off. I mean, the authoritarianism, the mask that they wore for years or decades, it's off. They don't give a fuck. And everyone knew, even those who voted for Trump knew he was authoritarian, but there's a lot of people, there's a lot, even ANCAPs, so-called ANCAPs, who liked that. And they wanted the strong man, and, you know, and they're opportunists.
The great man, yeah.
Oh, great man theory. Well, no, it's not even great man. Yeah. It is the man who will deliver, you know, whatever type of rule. So I understand why so-called libertarians or ANCAPs abandon principles, because ANCAPs and libertarianism isn't going anywhere. People want something that works.
Yeah.
And so Trump's brand of authoritarianism, alt-right, whatever, it's kind of, it's working. It's working. Whether you like it or not, it's fucking working.
Yeah, he's making the trains run on time, right?
Right. And it's also tweaking the nose of the social justice warriors, which is a fucking huge.
It's
a huge problem.
Yeah.
Well, no, they're the reason why the alt-right are a thing.
Oh, totally.
So,
yeah, I mean, that's a total pushback. I agree.
Well, right. So the only thing I can say to libertarians are to say, you know, the state's never going to go away. You know, there's going to be always something going on. Even in a stateless society, you'll still have someone like Negan or something similar. All you can do is
give me back your shit.
Yep. Use defensive measures. Do whatever you can, whether it's technology or other people, but use defensive measures to protect yourself from whomever's in charge. And don't be a stupid ass fucking activist and make yourself well known, because you're just sowing the seeds of your own doom. That's all it is.
The nail that sticks up, right?
Right. Hide in plain sight. But yeah, those in Keene really don't know what the fuck's going on, do they?
Well, I've never been up there. I haven't heard much about them since, you know, Porkfest kind of fell out of the graces of the libertarian movement. But I'm not a big fan of activism either. You know, I believe in kind of like what you're saying, dude. Basically withdrawing consent, or, you know, staying off, using alternate methods, or, you know, to kind of counteract or subvert that Goliath.
Well, even then, it's like there are people who believe in like the different festivals and whatnot. There's a group, or maybe there's, I don't even know if there's a group, but if you actually look at what Bill Buper has put out, you go to Zero Gov.
Zero Gov.
But check out the form. I mean, and there's like some extremely subversive shit in there. And those are for the real fighters, the real warriors who actually are in this for the long haul.
Right.
Not moralizing, not talking about, you know, oh, you're violating the NAP. Oh, you're doing this. No, fuck no. You want to get your hands dirty. You're ready to subvert the state and fight back. Check out Bill Buper and Zero Gov.
Yeah. Also from AZ, man. I just love how analytical and precise and his moral clarity, you know, that's what I really enjoy about him. And of course he's so well read and knowledgeable. Yeah, I haven't really delved into the forums too much, but I definitely dig his articles, and I just got his ebook a few days ago. I got to crack into that. So,
you know, I have the feeling his ebook is pretty much everything that he said, either on the Fiends or maybe at Porkfest.
Yeah.
So that's why I won't buy it, but I love reading. Yeah. Love reading the blog posts and then the guest blog posts.
Yeah, I miss him on the Fiends, man. But it's the way it goes.
I don't have a real reason why he's not on. I mean, something happened. He was busy with work or whatnot. But he's also writing. He's also finishing up, I believe, a book he's calling Dubbing Cancer Club, which I'm actually really excited to read when he puts it out.
Is that his novel? It's a fiction one, right? Yeah.
Yeah, correct.
That's awesome.
That's taking place in and about Tucson. And I was even asking him, I'm like, so are you even going to use the real streets of Tucson? He's like, no, it's all going to be fictional, but it is based in Tucson.
Nice. Yeah, I've been shameless. Oh, yeah. I've been trying to work on my book, which is, you know, kind of based on that, but in Arizona. Obviously, you know, write what you know. It'd probably be more Valley or North Arizona centric, so.
But, there is a guy, I forget his name. Let me look him up real quick. He's a writer for Reason Magazine, but he's from either Southern Arizona or Central, and he wrote a book similar. And
nice.
I'm trying to remember what it was.
So,
but yeah, fuck it.
Yeah, find it. Well, if you find it, we'll put it in the show link. You know, talk about it later. So, what precipitated your move? Let's bring it back a little personal. What precipitated your move to LV, man, Las Vegas?
To Las Vegas?
The Barony of Stormhaven?
Yeah, the Barony of Stormhaven.
I want to hear more about that.
Okay. What precipitated my move is because there's nothing in Tucson. Tucson is a barren fucking wasteland that has been owned by liberals. Southern Arizona is fucking shit.
Oh, yeah. Pima County.
Pima County is an absolute... It's an absolute wasteland.
Yeah.
I mean, even if you drive down the streets of Tucson, it's fucking terrible.
I've only been there a couple times, and I can't remember anything about it. It's like, I don't know. Kind of, have you ever been to El Paso?
Okay, let me give you real quick. I was born in El Paso and raised in Arizona.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. So I know everything about
El Paso. It kind of had the same feel to me. Like, I don't know. Just kind of. Barren.
No,
I don't know, man.
No, well, it's barren, but you don't see the dust and the dirt flying over from Juarez, Mexico, into El Paso, because the border is actually kind of far. The border of Nogales.
Nogales
is a bit far from Tucson, but yeah. If you drive on I-10 East, and if you're driving through El Paso, all you got to do is look right. You'll see a fence, and there's Mexico.
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean,
it's right there.
That's why we got to build a wall, right?
The wall's already there.
It's, I know, like, it's so fucking stupid, man. So, what do you think about that? Let's get into. It's like super serious, man. But I'm digging it. You know,
it's super. It's like wall. It's one is stupid. Two, it's not going to work. And three, it's just bad economics.
Yeah, absolutely.
if they had built a wall, say, oh, in the 1800s, like post-Civil War, or maybe pre-Civil War, who knows? I don't know. But they're not going to stop because, one, they're not actually taking care of the problem, which is Mexico and the corruption in Mexico. And you have to look at why people are actually fleeing Mexico.
Mm-hmm. The drug war. Well, that's part of it.
Drug war, you know, it's, I don't know. I mean, I can't speak for Mexicans. I, you know, Hugo of the Freedom Beans, he's down in Mexico City.
Yeah, man.
You know, and I can't speak for that. The only thing I can say is you need to look, you know, fuck the wall. It's all about the reason why they're coming, not, you know, stopping them. Plus, you're not going to stop them. I mean, no. You build the wall, what are they going to do? Tunnel under.
Yeah, they've been doing it.
Yeah.
So. I think historically, walls have only been used to slow. They're never a complete barrier. They're just there to kind of like slow or deter things. It's not, you know, never going to keep. You're never going to build a wall that's going to keep everybody out.
Well, no.
You know, human ingenuity will always find a way.
Right.
Markets will find a way. So, you know. I'm not, yeah, like, I'm not trying to speak for Mexico or all the problems in Mexico, but I think the prohibition of drugs, and then the drug war is a huge part of that problem. And I'm not blaming all of Mexico's problems on that, but yeah, I think you have to factor that into it. You know, the drug war and creation of the cartels and how it's used to justify all these, you know, building a wall and all these other kind of police state tactics. So I think if you ended that, that would, you know, probably take at least a little bit of the pressure off of Mexico and ease some of that corruption. But yeah, ultimately, nobody knows Mexico's problems better than Mexico, and nobody can solve them for them except them. So,
well, it's like, did you know about with the Mexican Revolution? Did you know that the deposed elite were replaced by younger elite by their sons mm-hmm. of the old elite? That's all it was. So theoretically, the whole Mexican Revolution was really nothing.
Well, and that's what most of them amount to. You know, that revolution right. is a cycle, a circle. It's, you know, 360 degrees. You come right back to where you start. So, just only the puppets change or the players change, but the system largely remains intact.
Yeah, nothing. Nothing's going to change. We only are looking at government creating more heartaches and problems. But on the flip side, you can't get rid of government. You're not going to be able to get rid of the U.S. government, regardless of what, you know, the cheerleaders for the libertarians believe.
I think maybe part of the problem, you know, just from what I've seen, and I'm fairly new, you know, I'm not like, I haven't been like a, you know, voluntarist or libertarian for a decade. I'm fairly new to it, but I think part of the problem is the sense of urgency or the time scale involved in what would be needed to kind of bring a lot of what people want to see happen to fruition. You know, I think, and I can see maybe people getting burnt out and being frustrated over the lack of moving, you know, moving down the field, so to speak. So, yeah, like you said, so then you start turning into accepted or more palatable alternatives like Trump or whoever, you know what I mean?
Or the actual Libertarian Party who quite legitimately sold their fucking soul for a seat of power in Washington.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sorry, Will Cooley, if you ever listen to this fucking podcast, you're wrong. Your Libertarian Party is absolute shit. No, I fucking love Will Cooley. He's a great fucking guy.
I follow him on Facebook. Guy. He's awesome.
The problem is the Libertarian Party is absolute fucking shit, and they just want a seat of power in Washington.
Well, dude.
Now, let's say this. Let's say Gary Johnson won. Okay, for some miraculous reason, the guy who said he didn't know what the fuck Aleppo was, won.
What's Aleppo?
We do that. Okay. He's out in 4 years. Everything he's fucking done will be destroyed by whoever's in power or whatever Congress is doing.
Right.
There is no chance in fucking hell any libertarian would be able to have any type of meaningful change that would stay. That's not the way the government works.
No, it's not.
The government doesn't work to give you freedom. It works to take it away bit by bit.
Yeah, I mean, that's it's in the nature. The frog and the scorpion, you know, the quote the old fable, you know. Why did the scorpion sting the frog? Because it's in its nature. No matter what you do for it or try to reform it, that's what it is.
And that's why.
But yeah, I don't get how the Libertarian Party thought that nominating Gary Johnson and then Bill Weld, really? There's nothing actually liberty about it. You know, there's no liberty in any of those.
Well, supposedly, from what I heard, Brett Pajonas, who is the main guy for the Libertarian Party of Nevada or whatever, had a big hand in getting Bill Weld on the ticket. So if anybody who wants to bitch at him, that's Brett Pajonas. That's P-O-U, I think, J-N-I-S. Find him on Facebook. Send him hate mail.
Yeah, find him on Twitter. Blow up his
head. Yeah, he fucking deserves it, you know. And the Libertarian Party of Nevada fucking deserves it because they're absolute shit.
Yeah, I haven't, you know, I think I kind of came in to after the Libertarian Party has been mostly marginalized or is what it is. So I never had to mess with it.
Was that a Freudian slip? Did I hear the Libertarian Party?
Yeah, you heard. I'm going to coin that. I'm copywriting it right now. No. I'm sure, yeah. Libtards, Libertardians.
Yeah, well, Libtard actually, you know, was a pejorative against liberals. But, I mean, fuck, nowadays you can just use it against libertarians because they don't, politically, they don't amount to shit.
Right.
They will never have any power. And honestly, would you want them to have power? Because I guarantee you they'll be corrupted in, what, a couple weeks.
Yeah, well, that's what's going to happen to Trump. I mean, like you said, you think if you get, quote unquote, the right, we just need to get the right man in there or woman, whatever, the right person. But it totally discounts like the bureaucracy that's been completely metastasized, you know, that you're never going to change. You're never going to change the bureaucracy, the deep state, you know, all the intelligence agencies and all these people have been, you know, White House staffers or lobby, you know, for decades. You know, that's where the real cancer is, you know, like changing the figurehead every 4 to 8 years isn't going to fucking change that.
Well, right. And the deep state, which has only now barely been talked about maybe in the past, what, 2, maybe 3 years? We're talking about all the unelected bureaucrats. I mean, fuck, the Supreme Court is actually part of the deep state.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, and they're supposed to be, you know, the protectors of the Constitution. Like, no, they destroyed the Constitution when there was, you know.
I always think of the Nazgul, the ring race from Lord of the Rings when I think of the Supreme Court, you know. The 9 people in black.
You know, and I really wonder whether or not, because Tolkien was a fucking, he was an anarchist.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a Christian anarchist. But I really wonder if the Nazgul actually were supposed to be the Supreme Court.
Yeah, I don't know if I've ever read anything explicitly saying that, but, you know.
There was an old Tom Woods podcast where they actually, he interviewed some guy and they were talking about the anarchism of Lord of the Rings.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy had actually done some really deep study. Now that's all I remember about. So I can't quote specifics.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure I listened to that one and
it's either, there. But if anyone actually wants to go through the old episodes of the Tom Woods podcast, it's there. Check it out.
Yeah. I love Tom Woods, but I gotta agree with the bad audio aspect of his show that always gets trashed.
Well, but it's not him. It's his fucking guest.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he's not willing to actually take the time out because maybe he believes they're too important or they'll balk and not want to do a show.
Yeah.
But let's just say the one time or maybe the two times I heard Brett Vinat on Tom Woods, excellent.
Mm-hmm.
Because Brett cares about audio, you know? So
yeah. Well, I mean, and how hard was it? Like, you know, you and I, we have this program, Discord, and we hooked up over it in 5 minutes, you know? Like, it's a free program. Oh, you install it, get a decent mic.
But we actually care about audio. We actually care about the, you know, the playback value of it. Whereas Tom Woods has probably a pro studio going on, but I mean, oh, for dude. Fuck's sake, when he interviewed Austin Peterson, the dude was on a fucking phone.
Yeah.
And my God, you couldn't hear him. I mean,
which is probably like which is probably a good thing. Fuck honestly. No, autism, plagiarism.
Well, actually, I'm really hoping he's at Freedom Fest this next year, because I went to Freedom Fest last year and Will and I were, we were hanging out the Heart, which is in Planet Hollywood, which is the main, like one of the main bars in Planet Hollywood. Austin Peterson came up to me and said that he was going to take over the Libertarian Party shortly before he got into a confrontation with a really drunk Jeff Berwick.
That's hard to believe. Get right out of town.
And they were looking like they were going to brawl. Well, I would actually oblige fucking Austin. I'd tell him, look, we can take this outside like men right now. Not, yeah. I bet you anything he will back the fuck down.
Yeah.
All you got to do is you call the bullies on their shit. You call them out. And if they want to throw down, you fucking throw down and you make it hurt.
Yeah.
Because that's how bullies learn. They learn after they get their asses beat.
So speaking of that, bullies learning, what about all these ANCOMs, man, running wild?
Oh, that was a great, great fucking segue.
All the anti-bullying, anti-fascist, anti-Antifa activists acting just like bullies and fascists.
Oh, are you talking about the Spencer
Richard Spencer.
Richard Spencer, yeah. So Richard Spencer, the so-called white separatist or white supremacist, whatever he is, because he can't be a Nazi Nazis don't exist because there's no such thing as a Nazi party.
Exactly. But, neo-Nazi.
Even neo-Nazi. You can't use the Nazi because the Nazi was an actual political party.
Yeah, the National Socialist Party of Germany.
So how can you be a neo-Nazi but not have a political party to back that up?
Right.
Anyways.
But, you know, as deplorable as the alt-right is, how do you, you know, and I've gotten into beefs with people like trying to justify, you know, this dude getting punched. As funny as I loved seeing it, you know what I mean? Like, part of me, at a gut level, I was like, oh, that's fucking funny. But then when I really thought about it, I'm like, that's fucked up, man.
I didn't think it was funny at all. In fact, I was hoping he would actually go after the guy. But yeah. He didn't.
You said, because bullies, right?
I mean, I would have.
He ran away holding his face.
Doesn't matter. I'd fucking chase that fucker down and,
absolutely.
And hit him back. I'm sorry. Eye for a fucking eye. But in him doing that, he justified any type of alt-right exacting political violence on any type of, anti-fascist or whatever. They opened the floodgates.
Right.
That's what it was. And, you know, people are all cheering him on. I'm like, cool. If your ass gets beaten, you know, like James Weeks or whatever, his ass gets beaten or hit for whatever reason, I'm not going to say boo. Because, you know, he was actually, you know, applauding this. I'm like,
you're saying if somebody who was applauding it got hit.
James Weeks was fucking applauding it. He was laughing at it. He was kind of supporting it. Anyone who actually supported this, they get hit. I'm not coming to their defense.
No, I don't support it, but I'm saying as a visceral or gut reaction, it was kind of funny. But yeah, absolutely. I think it kind of gives, like you said, not carte blanche, but it gives them justification to ratchet up retaliation. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
It was a fucking pussy move to begin with. Like, you know, the dude's giving an interview and you just come up and sucker punch him and run away. That's, you know what I mean? That's, yeah, he deserved to get caught and stomped.
Well, but here's the thing. You look at Richard Spencer's reaction afterwards. Did people expect any less? Because he's talking about fucking, you know, armed thugs, you know, black or brown shirts.
Yeah.
You know, whatever the fuck you want to call it, but it's a logical reaction to all this. You show me force, well, I'm going to get more force, use more force to subdue you and put you in your place. I mean, come on, people. People who moralize the fucking nap, they just need to shut the fuck up. They really do. Unless you want you to say, I don't believe in the nap anymore, and I'm willing to use violence to, you know, promote my belief.
It's all about being consistent, man. Like, I think the nap is a great jumping point or a starting point. I mean, you can't really argue with non-aggression if you're not being aggressed against. But at the same time, it's not everything. It's not like, you know, some...
It's not the end-all be-all. Right. And the reason why I've fallen away specifically from the nap period is because of all the goddamn moralizing. You get all these fucking newly minted ANCAPs or libertarians preaching about the nap. And that's all it is. Like, the nap has become some fucking religion. and it has it. And people want to try and give me shits, you know, saying, oh, well, you try to make a joke that the nap's a religion. Oh, that's not funny. I'm like, I'm not trying to be funny. I'm telling you what I see. And if people want to agree with it, cool. If not, I don't give a fuck. But that's why I don't, you know, proselytize the nap. Fuck that.
Yeah, I don't mention it a lot, partly because, you know, I think it's been beaten to death or covered to death. Even though I am, you know, fairly new to it or whatever, but, I mean,
it takes a little bit. I mean, once, if you start really just looking at what people are saying and, really kind of internalizing what they're saying, it gets old really quick, because if all you're talking about is the nap and not really anything else of substance or how you would progress the society we're living in now into a more freer society.
True. But,
you know,
conversely, like, a lot of people haven't or are not familiar with, you know, I mean, they are in a way. It's basic morality. Don't hit, don't steal, don't kill, don't take shit that's not yours. I mean, it's, you know, the stuff you should learn in kindergarten, but that's only, you know, I think people really only learn to apply that in their personal lives. They don't think to extrapolate that to, like, society at larger. Like, well, how does the government do all these things that I'm not allowed to do? You know, why aren't they bound to the same?
Well, because they actually rules, because you know? they have special badges.
Oh yeah, shiny badges.
And regardless,
magic parchments.
Doesn't matter. They've got the weapons. They've got might makes right.
Yeah.
So they have the might. So therefore, in their eyes, they're right. It all boils down to force and the correct application of force.
Well, yeah, and that's why they want a monopoly on it. Or have them, you know, a de facto monopoly on it.
So I actually, when I was at Jack Fest, which we'll talk about in a minute, I wanted to go so bad. Well, you need to go next. You need to come up. It's August, year. What, first through 8th. Yeah, this year. And I'm pretty sure Jim and I will be there. I'm looking at probably setting up my own brewery and hopefully setting up a couple kegs. Yeah, a couple kegs of what I'd be brewing for Jack Fest, but we'll see. We'll see if money's there.
Yeah, so Jack Fest, you said?
Yeah, Jack Loop Freedom Fest. That is Jack Loop Freedom Fest. If anyone of your listeners actually listens to Ernie Hancock and Freedom Phoenix.
Yeah.
He's a big promoter of it. I mean, we were all up there having a good time.
No, I ran the either the Fiends or the Lulberts app I ran the Fiends or Lulberts ad that promoted it last year. I just couldn't make it, man. So.
Oh, okay.
But that's my goal, dude, because I think that's way cool. It's way decentralized from what I, you know, kind of an anti what Porkfest has become, I guess.
Oh yeah, it is. Well,
not that I've ever been, but from what I've heard, that it's kind of going towards, you know.
Right. Well, Porkfest has been co-opted by the Koch brothers, Reason magazine. You know, right. the cosmetarians, so to speak.
Beltway libertarians as a.
Yeah, yeah. Right. So Alma Summers is the one. I think, you know, it's the guy named Jack helped Alma Summers, and they put together this festival and. You know, so it's just, that's what it is. But she originally was named Pork West until Porkfest decided to throw a fit and maybe get some legality involved.
My intellectual property, right?
Well, and that's the Free State Project. And we've seen how well the Free State Project's done, you know, expelling Ian and whatnot.
Yeah, they used him as much as they could and then just booted him.
Well, you know, they're very I don't even know what to call this new breed of ANCAP, the ones that were very opportunistic. when it came to Trump and leaving, like, you know, what is it? Love, Life, and Anarchy, and Stefan Molyneux, and all these other, Chris Cantwell, all these other people, very opportunistic when it came to Trump. So now they became anarcho alt-right, if that's even a thing, or they're just all right now. I mean,
I hope not, because did you see there was something from like the University of Kansas where they were trying to lump anarcho-capitalism in with the alt-right?
Oh, no, they didn't try.
No,
they,
I mean, they put out a flyer.
And so therefore, anarcho-capitalism, and that's why I've seen a lot of people shed the ANCAP moniker because of the stupid shit that's going on now. So anarcho-capitalism as an actual movement is fucking dead. People like Cantwell, Molyneux, whatever, who claim to be ANCAPs, they destroyed it. So now people need to look for something else. Either don't label yourselves or try to stick to the stupid voluntarist moniker, which is going to get lumped in with ANCAPs regardless, because people pretty much try to use that interchangeably. So
what do you think is a good term then? I mean, because I've listened to you on the Lilberts, and you have some interesting theories, anarcho-monarchism or...
Well, no, yeah, that's what I am, because I, you know, I'm not an outright monarchist.
Right, right.
But the way I look at it is, like, there is a way to combine anarcho-whatever principles, you know, anarchistic principles with monarchism. I mean, yeah, you're going to be looking towards a ruler, but if that ruler believes in private property and is actually willing to sell you or just, you know, deal with you on a one-on-one basis in private property, what's the issue?
Well,
you know, it comes down to the individual. Individual wants to approach me, and if I have any land to sell or a service to sell, you know, and they want to buy it, great. And like, if they come, oh, go ahead.
Sorry, go ahead, man. We'll get to the give and take here, figured out.
Well, that's all it is. And if someone comes to me and they don't agree with my terms, I'm not forcing anybody.
Right.
You know, and that's why, you know, I'm legitimately a baron. You know, I am, you know, quote unquote, royalty of, you know, of Sealand, because, well, I bought mine, you know, very, very capitalistic, like, but yeah, no, I bought my type. So, and I have no bones about it. I mean,
I find it's an interesting term, man, because it's, you know, anarcho, which is no rulers, but then monarchy, which is a ruler.
Ruler of one. But if you take the ruler of one, and the ruler is actually willing to help and deal with private property rights and actually help protect freedom or the freedom of his people, which may be his tenants or, you know, whatever, then
yeah.
And in my mind, the, even though the term vanguard itself has been, appropriated by communists and whatnot,
totally.
Vanguard just means, you know, front line.
Right. Well, first,
why
defense.
Doesn't liberty, why don't libertarians and libertarianism have a vanguard? There needs to be someone to defend libertarianism or the ideals and whatnot. And you really don't, because you have a whole bunch of individuals, you know, trying to claim what it is. I'm like, no, fuck that. This is what I believe, and this is what I'm willing to defend. If you like it, great. If you don't, you can move on and go argue with someone else. I don't give a fuck. You know, I'm not budging.
Yeah, so you're saying ultimately, I've heard that theory before too, about how at least the first generation of monarchs, like, it almost goes down to, I don't want to say ownership, but traditionally traditionally kings of old were probably better stewards than the current government we have, because they kind of looked at it as like it was an ownership thing, or, you know what I mean, like, this is my kingdom, so I need to.
Well, right. This
not
is my,
not
this
not every one of them, obviously. I mean, they're all horrible despots, but yeah, it's that ownership property instead of like where you get these bureaucrats or politicians that are like, well, I'll be in here for, you know, 10 years, and I want my pension, and I want to impose whatever I can, and then I'm out. You know what I mean?
There are a lot of monarchs, especially when the war was declared, they had to use their own treasury, their own coin. They couldn't, you know, a lot of them couldn't jack up taxes or whatnot, because then the peasants were revolting, and that's not exactly a great way to govern.
But after a few of them get beheaded, they, you know, maybe they took a, and I'm not advocating that, but I'm saying historically, You know,
oh, right.
They probably learned.
Well, and a lot of the ideas, and if you look at it, I mean, a lot of people give Hans Hermann Hoppe shit. But if you read God the Democracy That Failed, in it, he makes the case that monarchy, as opposed to democracy, was actually a far superior system.
Yeah, I read that.
And he lays it out. So I took that. I'm like, okay, you do that. But if you take it one step further and you actually apply kind of like the anarchist principles, you know, I mean, anarcho-monarchism seems like a contradiction of terms.
Initially,
Initially, by definition, mm-hmm. it is. But if you actually look at it and you actually have a person who is willing to do the things to secure and keep the freedom of, you know, his people, or i.e. his tenants, or however you want to do it. I mean, to me, that's a you know, win-win situation. Whereas the way I look at it is this: not everyone is prepared psychologically to live in a quote unquote really free society. There are still those who would want the protection of, say, of a strong man or whatever.
Right.
And if you give that, and if the strong man is a man of decent principle and libertarian values, those people will flourish. Now on the flip side, like I've explained in the Lulberts, you know, a lot of times it's a given, or it's not give and take, but, you know, bad despots happen, bad rulers happen. I mean, fuck, even now, bad presidents happen. You could be even in school, you're like, okay, you're part of a team, but you have a team lead. And that leader turns out to be shit. Well, everyone's going to suffer.
Right.
Okay. It happens.
So. Yeah. But I think that the, it's as long as you're consenting, or it's voluntary. You know what I'm saying? I don't have a problem with people joining hierarchical structures or groups or whatever, as long as it's completely voluntary. You know what I'm saying? But,
oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Everything I would advocate would be strictly voluntary. I would have, you know, as I gave in the other the podcast, which I came out as an anarcho-monarchist, I said, look, if I owned, say, let's say 10 acres, and I wanted to parcel it off into plots and whatever and sell those plots, I would have, like any other landlord or a land seller, I would have in a community, it's a little just like a gated community. There's a set of rules that you would need to follow.
Right.
HOA. Buying property. Yeah. Well, no, it's not HOA because I wouldn't charge them.
But
right. But it's the same thing as saying, look, I have these set of rules. Will you abide? If you can abide by said rules, you may purchase this property. If not, please look elsewhere. That simple.
Yep. Sweet. I dig that, man. I'm not saying fully like on board, but
it's not.
I think like getting back to kind of what you were saying with people not being ready for a completely free market or free society. I think that's probably one of the biggest like impediments to it, or the reasons for the state is people fear the unknown, or they need that sense of security. You know, like. And that's kind of what the state provides, I think, you know, more than anything. I think a lot of people are willing to tolerate the abuses and predations of the government as long as they feel like, well, they're providing me with stability or security. And to me, like, as far as advocating, you know, a completely voluntary society, that's the biggest obstacle to overcome. And I don't even know if when they're talking about it, they realize it, you know. That's the bit, you know, that they crave that sense of security, but I really think that's the biggest obstacle that I've ever seen or encountered. You know, it's like, well, and what's going to happen? You know,
ooh,
warlords will take over. Well, the government's a fucking warlord. You know what I mean? Like, it's always that appeal to fear or the unknown or just like a craving for a general sense of security or protection. And unfortunately, they think that a government has a monopoly on the use of force and violence and is the only way to provide it. So I don't know how to, you know, I guess the struggle is like getting people to get around that barrier. I don't know.
Right. No, and I agree with that. There was, and I found this question to be interesting. There was a man on the Joe Rogan podcast named Hunter, I think it's Mars or Mertz. Anyways, and this guy actually specifically, because he brought up ANCAPs in Joe's podcast, which, you know, as I'm listening going to work, caught my attention. And apparently this guy had a lot of disagreements with, say, the Cato Institute or whatever, and a lot of it became public. So I was looking for the arguments that, you know, were given on both sides. Really couldn't find it. But in searching him, someone on Reddit actually had posted an interesting question. Was government created because of a market demand?
Interesting.
And that in of itself would really blow the fucking mind of a lot of libertarians. Well, saying, well, it's not a free market. But if the free market clamored for a government and they got it, is that wrong?
Yeah. No. Well, yeah. I mean, that's what I'm saying. I think that there is a demand, either subconsciously there's always going to be a demand for some kind of, like I said, they want protection or they want stability. Why is it the government is the only provider of that? Like, why isn't the free market? Why couldn't the free market be a better, you know, option for that? And I think a lot of that has to do with history and also with the way that we're taught in school, you know, the whole indoctrination of, since you're a kid, you know, being brought up to venerate the state, to pledge allegiance to it, to look at it as the bestower of these freedoms and rights. So what could we go for? What could we do without that?
The modern nation state is a recent thing. We're talking about the 19th century.
Yeah.
Okay. So before that, I mean, what did you have? You had empires. Empires rose and fell. And empires rise and fell all the fucking time. This is something throughout history that probably will never change. And I've actually asked Prof. CJ about this. I'm like, okay, so when Rome fell, when Rome proper fell, you had the Dark Ages. You actually had a decentralization. Yes, you have warlords and everything else, because anytime something like that falls, you're going to have a power vacuum.
Yeah, power vacuum.
Power vacuums are a part of nature as well. So if the state were to fall, say, tomorrow, giant power fucking vacuum.
Oh, absolutely.
Who's going to fulfill that? The military, mercenaries, and everyone with arms. And so it kind of comes back to what Chairman Mao said. Power, you know, power is, delegated by the barrel of the gun.
Political power, yeah, comes from the barrel of a gun.
Mm-hmm. Well, right. Okay. So that, and it just means, this has happened throughout society, so the use and the management of force and the application of force is the primary thing that has kept government or society or people in general kind of alive. Does that make sense?
It does, but I guess what I'm getting, I get back to the whole why grant an entity monopoly. There is truth to what you said about political power coming from the barrel of a gun. So that's why. I mean, obviously, that's why liberals or authoritarians always try to control access to firearms. Control the guns.
Honestly, even the NRA doesn't even do a great
job. Oh, no, they're horrible.
For gun rights. So.
No, they're second only to the Democratic Party in restricting gun rights. But you know what I mean? So why if we take that as, a priori or whatever, established fact or whatever, why do so many people seek to grant a monopoly on violence or the use of force or protection to a government? Like, every government sucks. Government sucks at doing everything. So it should only do, law enforcement or whatever, protection, laws and courts. You know what I mean? Like, it's...
Right. But then again, I mean, even then, even if a minarchist were to say that, I'm like, okay, you go to court. You're still playing by their rules because you're born into a system and you will play by... You will have to be forced to play by their rules. What's the option? The option is leaving civilization, leaving civilized society, and striking out on your own. Now, that was a common thing a long time ago.
Yeah.
Very common. Well, it was a common thing. Nowadays, because it's, it's just inbred into people to be subservient.
I heard Bill Buprit make that argument very succinctly and brilliantly, like, that westward expansion was largely driven by people trying to get away from the central planners and the bureaucrats and you know, authoritarians of the coast, you know, the commonwealths, you know, the Boston and New York and Philly. And that was largely what drove people out to, you know, good old AZ and points beyond.
And California and all that. But look what happened. Look at what happens. Government just comes following you.
Well, yeah.
People set up, even say, we'll take, Tucson's a bad example. Actually, I think Arizona's a bad example because Tucson was actually just the remnants of a Spanish fort.
Right.
And the promenade, and just expanded from there. But we'll say people expanded out west, and they formed their own tiny communities. Things where they were living on by their own, or on their own by their own code or whatnot. But with populations and everything else, as soon as they start growing and things start happening, and the Indian incursions and whatnot of, you know, the Southwest,
mm-hmm.
you're always going to have people clamoring for help. When they feel helpless, they want to turn to a strong man to help them alleviate their fears. It's always been like that. You're not going to get rid of that.
No, that's interesting. I mean, you could say it's part of, they're saying like it's part of human psychology to do that in times of need.
I think it's basic. It may be DNA oriented. I don't know.
Yeah.
But it may be based like basic tribal, you know, impulses. But now the definition of a tribe, well, the tribe used to be X amount of people. But in terms of westward expansion, you start looking at, you know, more and more. There are some people who could actually trade with the Navajo in Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
There are some people who couldn't, and the Navajo raided them. So what ends up happening? You then, the Civil War and the westward expansion of government, and then you get, you know, everyone from this, or some of the fighters and the generals to the Civil War over to Arizona. And then they start slaughtering the Navajo.
Yep.
They end up and making the Navajo. Well, no, Navajo were Apache.
Right.
I mean, I'm sorry. The Apache were Navajo. But during the Trail of Tears, there was a sect of the Navajo that stopped and went south. They formed the Apache, you know, the Apache Nation down in northeastern Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the other Navajo continued marching east to the Gallup area, which is the general Navajo reservation that in northeastern Phoenix or northeastern Arizona. Sorry.
Yeah, dude, I grew up on the res, and you know a little more about that than I do. That's awesome.
yeah. Well, I'll tell you something. I grew up. I know a lot about the Navajo and the Zuni, especially their kachinas and artifacts, because that's a part of my family too. On my dad's side.
Oh, okay. Very cool.
Yeah. So yeah, is it okay to punch okay, so we're gonna go back. That was a long diatribe. Now I'm coming back. We buried the lead
Yeah, we did. But I love it, man. That was cool because that was
about the original question. Okay,
it's organic. So,
oh yeah, definitely. So is it okay to punch a Nazi? Well, we've kind of discussed that. Now we go back. Is it okay to punch a communist? I say, yeah, if you say it's okay to punch a Nazi, then yes, you may punch a communist.
Well, you have to be consistent. You know, if it's okay to punch one, then
you have to punch the other. It has to be, they have to be punched equally. Now, going into what the communism or the soft communism are, I mean, are you willing to go onto college campuses and sucker punch many professors?
Oh, yeah, totally. Where does it
start there?
I mean, where does it end? Are you, if you are able to punch anybody simply for expressing an idiotic viewpoint, or one that, you know, potentially could lead to violence, but they're not committing violence themselves, like, where does that end? Can I go, you know, punch any commie because they're advocating taking my property? You know, in theory, I should be able to.
Well, it's a slippery slope argument,
right?
And from that, and this is true. Violence will lead to more violence, will lead to more violence, will probably lead to genocide and maybe, you know, whatever. So it just does. I mean, because it doesn't stop. Now, if you're actually good, like, I mean, really good with violence. You could wipe out an entire political ideology, but that would take time, resources, and it's gonna be, there's gonna be a lot of blood on your hands.
Well, we're not advocating that. We'll leave that to government. but no, but then how do you kill an idea? You know what I mean? Like, you going and punching an alt-righter in the face, as justified as you may think it does, isn't going to change his mind. It's not going to stop that movement. You know, it's just a visceral reaction, and it's going to have adverse effects, you know, because now they're like, that's how Trump got elected. You know, like the left has been punching just normal Americans, and I'm not sticking up for the right by any means, but I'm just saying predominantly the left is the more authoritarian. Left's like the progressives like to think that they're, you know, liberal and free, but they're way more authoritarian in my opinion lately anyway, probably because Obama was president for 8 years, but you know, now the right will get its chance to be authoritarian again with Trump. But
well, in essence, you kind of answered your own question. They're both authoritarian.
Right.
It's just what flavor do you like?
Which boot do you want on your neck?
Right.
Or do you do you favor the right or the left boot? You know what I mean? It's where does that end? You know, where do you draw the line? I guess is what I'm saying. You know.
You don't. I mean, you don't.
If you go down that path where anytime anybody expresses an opinion that you consider offensive or dangerous, and you justify or rationalize violence against them simply for saying it, then that doesn't end. Like you said, the slippery slope. You know, it all ends in, you know, Trump sending federal troops to you know, to Chicago or whatever city, you know,
I'm waiting for, you know, the federal troops to be sent, but then there are gonna be a lot of people who start cheering that on, and you know damn well that's just bad. I mean, so if the left keeps on pushing the way they're doing, we're gonna see another 4 years of Trump for a total of 8, and then we'll see what happens. I mean, from what I've seen, that the people who are running for DNC chair are going to ensure Trump's reelection, because they're telling a white woman who's running for DNC chair is telling whites they need to shut up and to listen and to not argue with anyone.
Yeah.
Well, so the disconnect. But what I want to get back to was, you said, you know, you're supposed to be able to kill an idea. Well, here's the problem. Communism, Nazism, I mean, whatever your take on it is, those were bad ideas. But yet, even in the marketplace, they still survived. So the idea is that disinfectant is the best thing for, you know, bad ideas. Kind of is bullshit, because communism's killed a hell of a lot more than Nazism.
Oh, absolutely.
But yet, communism, the ideal, still is alive and actually is celebrated by many people.
Yeah, I mean, I always like drinking the delicious irony of, you know, ANCOMs, or which are just communists, basically, you know, running around with their flags and proclaiming how bad, and not that it isn't bad, how bad fascism or Nazism is, when their ideology has killed many more millions of people, even though they are, oh, that's state capitalism bullshit. It was fucking communism. It was socialism. Just not the national flavor. So you got no moral high ground.
Yeah, they have no high ground, but in reality, so fucking what?
Yeah.
You may have the moral high ground at Terrace or ANCAP, but do you really have the support? Do you have the same support that these ANCOMs and communists have? No. They're willing to enforce their ideas because of their numbers. It's real simple. It's a numbers game.
So how do we counteract that? You know, I mean, that's part of the reason I think you and I do what we do, go on podcasts and talk shit. I seriously want people to start thinking about this stuff. And
oh, they won't.
I know
they won't. There is a large amount of people who will die if civil unrest happens, say a year or two, whatever. There's going to be a lot of dead people. the only people who are surviving are the ones who kept their heads down and, you know, maybe, you know, secretly started a network and they're able to trade and whatnot with other anarchists or, you know. But all I can say, there's going to be a lot of death, a lot of fucking death, and lessons will not be learned. The only thing you can do is to protect your family and maybe your close circle of friends or whomever you deem valuable enough to protect.
Right. Well, and, I mean, and that's kind of the essence of what I drew me to, you know, libertarianism or whatever, was self-reliance, being responsible for yourself. And then, you know, once you get that down, obviously you can care for other people. But if you don't take care of you and yourself and your family first, then how can you care for others? You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. No, I fully agree. The problem is even a lot of ANCAPs or so-called voluntarists are still looking to other people for their ideas. I'm like, no, take care of yourself. Fucking, you know, do your own thing. Fuck everyone else. Mm-hmm. If you can actually survive by yourself or with your family or whatever, then you can start allowing other people to come in. But first, everything, it's all about you. And you need to take care of yours, however, whatever that means.
I think, like, that's kind of an interesting point, man, how you say maybe there was a market demand for government or whatever. I think that maybe that's a big issue with a lot of these celebritarians, like Molyneux, Cantwell, Kokesh. God, I hate that he lives in Arizona. But, you know, whatever.
Well, Kokesh is just a fucking sociopath.
Oh,
he yeah. He's a fucking, I mean, he straight up said, yeah, he was, I forget what branch it was, the Army, Marines.
I think he was a Marine.
He was a Marine, yeah. I don't want to disparage, you know, I have, in a weird fucking way, the worst thing you want to do is talk shit about the military because they're the first ones to fuck you up.
Well,
so, if you can subvert, you know, the military or subvert the people, you know.
I have family members who were in the service or are still currently. And as much as I lament or don't like the military, I don't think attacking soldiers is a good tactic. You know what I mean? You see a lot of libertarians or ANCAPs go out there and or even to the police by extension. You know, I'll call out the cops all day for having a monopoly on violence and all the bullshit they do. But I just think it's a bad strategy to go out there and be like, you know, baby killers or whatever. You know, you should be trying to win with ideas, not.
No, ideas know. Ideas will win.
Well,
one thing I learned, and I believe. Well, no, right? I agree, but I believe if you're really to want to get people to see reason, you got to go for emotion. You debate with emotion because that's all people know nowadays.
Yeah, and that's part of the problem.
You cannot debate with logic. There was an excellent video that Davi Barker, when we were in D.C. at the International Students for Liberty Conference, we were tabling for Bitcoins Not Bombs and Muslims for Liberty.
Awesome.
But he gave a speech, or I will find it, and then you can put in the show notes. But he basically gave a speech on why, you know, on propaganda. And why propaganda works so well. And if the libertarian, in my mind, if the libertarian movement is to succeed in anything, you need to play at their own game, but do it better. You need to rule or use emotion, use the emotional arguments to help sway people over. Because if people don't think logically, they're not going to get a logical argument.
I think that's part of the problem too, is that logic and reason aren't, or philosophy in general, but aren't emphasized in traditional schooling, but for obvious reasons, you know, because if you use logic and reason, then you kind of realize that it's all bullshit. But that was one of the best classes I ever took in college, was a logic class. And my instructor, he said, logic is often compelling, but rarely convincing. You know what I mean? So I think kind of what you're saying, yeah, it's that visceral thing that people cling to. Like, they may be compelled. Hello?
Yeah, no, I'm here. Oh, okay. I just posted the video on Discord. So if you want to put in the show notes,
yeah, right on. And it's compelling, but it's not always convincing. You know what I mean? And that's part of the problem with using, like you said, logical arguments. But
it's like nowadays, because if you have to look at what public education has done to people, Okay, well, we know what they've done to people. So what's the best way to get to them? Using the same tactics that public education has used is the emotional argument. That's the only way, at least I believe, you can, you know, change people's minds nowadays.
Yeah. Well, and I was trying to get back at, like, the whole market thing. I think that's why you get a lot of, you know, like I said, Kokesh and Cantwell and Molyneux, who were trying to make a living off of being an anarcho-capitalist or libertarian or whatever, and they figured out, oh, shit, I can't. You know what I mean? So now they're being forced to, you know, redirect to something where, you know, there's a better market for it. And, you know, in the essence, in the process, betraying their principles and everything that they claim to stand for.
Right, right.
So, I don't know, man. How do you create a new market, I guess, is what we're, you know, how do you create a new market for liberty, I guess, you know?
Actually, a way to do it, and I was originally thinking of leaning this way in terms of self-identification, but I know a couple of other people have actually renounced anarcho-capitalism and gone to anarcho-transhumanist because in their minds they believe that technology is the way to achieve freedom, period. Whether it's a little bit, whether it's a lot. I mean, I've seen guys like Virgil. What's his name? Do you know Virgil?
Virgil Vadiva?
Yeah.
Okay. So Self-411, great app. I don't know him personally. I'm saying I know of him. Yeah, yeah.
Right. Okay. But people like him, like, oh, God. I mean, fucking Ross Ulbricht and what he did with the Silk Road. I mean, you're talking about using technology.
Cody Wilson.
Yeah, Cody, and definitely with Defense Distributed.
Right.
Distributed, yeah. You take technology or you invent new technologies to create a freer society. Now, granted, we're not going to be free in our lifetimes, you know, by any stretch of the imagination, but here are people who are actually putting things out there to make a difference, to change things. Bit by bit, little by little, and, you know, Michael Dean.
Bitcoin,
Monero. Yep. I mean, all these things are small steps, and you know, you put them together bit by bit, you're making stepping stones. So the stepping stones become blocks. Blocks become a house. Houses, you know, provide security.
Well, and I love Bitcoin. I'm trying to mine it. I got to upgrade my PC, but I think that was what was really cool what Michael Dean was trying to do. With his Indie Starter starter campaign, Indiegogo, which was raise money for that uncensorable DNS, .bip. But like you said, you know, he was trying to raise quite a bit of money. And, the ambition is there. I love the vision. But like you said, maybe the market isn't quite there yet. I think he's, you know what I mean? He's kind of ahead of that.
Right. It's ahead of the times. The issue is, there is no market demand for it because nothing – I mean, granted, caps on freedom of speech, they're there, but nothing is overt yet. Once something becomes overt, people will then say, well, oh, shit, we need to do something, and then there's an idea already there. The architecture is kind of already there. Then start rolling.
But, yeah, he's trying to build the roads.
Before. Oh, yeah. And we, unfortunately, he had to cancel the project. Did you read that?
I heard him talking about it, and, you know, obviously, you know, he did the right thing. He gave everybody, you know, all the donors their money back. But stuff like that. I think it's just people are just trying to catch up, man. You know, like,
yeah,
it's
not
a slow process, and it won't be realized when you or I are alive, most likely. But for me, it's not just about me. Like, you know, I have kids, so I want to leave them a better world, or at least when I'm, you know, dying on my deathbed, I want to be able to say, hey, at least I tried, or, you know, I did something, even if it was just making a podcast or whatever. But, you know, I tried to advance that cause. So, you know, I think that people have to have a realistic time frame or realistic expectations about what the movement, quote unquote, is doing. I don't even like calling it that, but you know what I'm saying? What liberty or whatever the people involved in this are trying to do. Like, you have to have a more realistic time frame, I think.
Well, yeah. And all I can say is the liberty movement, it should be dead. It should be dead and gone. And people just doing their own thing and maybe releasing products or whatever, but don't consider yourself a part of the movement, because for one, that movement's been hijacked.
Oh, totally.
It was hijacked a long time ago.
I don't even like using the word. I'm just, you know, using it for lack of a better term in my brain at the moment. But
well, no, I agree. But the reason why people use terms like that is because it's for identification purposes,
right?
You know, come back to the Dunbar number. We can only know so many people officially or intimately, and then everything else starts getting, you know, strained.
Word. So build a wall. I'm just
kidding. Build a wall. Yeah. Build a wall. Build it on your own property, but yeah, build that wall.
Build a wall around your own life, and just let you want to let in.
Now, let me give an example. So there's a lot of black folk that work at Amazon with me, and they're very much brainwashed into liberal, you know, archetypes and whatnot. Mm-hmm. I was getting into a discussion, and I was actually at work the night of the election. I was probably like one of the only, well, I was rooting for Trump because, well, why the hell not? I wanted him over Hillary.
Oh yeah.
But so I was probably the only person rooting for Trump there. And everyone's like, well, he's a fucking racist, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, okay, why? Because he wants to build a wall. I'm like, okay, let's look at this. Israel has a wall surrounding it. Are they racist? Now, yes, I know they are to a certain extent, but that was not my point. My point was to make this man look like a fool.
Uh-huh.
So he said no. I'm like, okay, what about the Vatican? The Vatican City has a wall built around it. Are they racist? No. Well, then there you go. Now shut the fuck up. And he looked at me. He nodded and he remained quiet. So I'm just like, geez, the wall is a bad idea in and of itself, but walls are meant for protection.
Yeah. Maybe, I mean, historically,
in the case of probably Israel or Vatican City. Okay. But it's not building. Well, I mean, it's not the walls
around the Vatican are to protect all the stolen loot. You know,
but it's protecting yeah, something.
But it is protecting something.
I right? mean, it's protecting all that gold. I mean,
mm-hmm. Yeah. I ponder the irony of that, or the hypocrisy of that, like the Pope calling for. And I'm not saying, you know, I'm not an advocate of closed or open borders. Like I said, I think it should be private property. But we have a government, and for better or worse, it's in control of, you know, security or maintaining those borders, until that changes, you know, that's just the reality of it. And, but then consider the Pope calling for, you know, open borders and refugees. How many refugees has the Vatican taken in? It's a sovereign nation, you know?
Right.
I don't think it's taken any in that I know.
And how many refugees has Israel taking in, you know?
Yeah. It creates them. It'll take them in if they're of Jewish descent or whatever, but, you know, yeah, well, it's
right,
but it's
they're
not,
very, so, they're very
right,
selective.
That's a restriction, right? Exactly. So it's, anyway, but yeah, more so the Vatican, you know?
Well, I find it very odd that all of a sudden liberals who used to hate Catholicism and the Pope are all of a sudden rallying around this Pope because he's saying things they like.
Yeah. He's a commie.
Great.
Let's call it what it is. He's a commie.
Yeah. Yeah. But you say that to a liberal and it's not a pejorative. It's actually a good thing.
It's funny, like
But with Ratzinger, the previous Pope, or maybe yeah, the previous Pope. Okay, he served the Palpatine looking guy. Yeah. Ratzinger. Okay, so he was part of the Hitler Jugend or the Hitler Youth. And yet that was that was a bad thing, and everyone's saying, oh my god, he's a Nazi. But yeah, we'll come back to the whole thing that this pope, the new one, or whatever the fuck his name is,
Francis
is a fucking, you know, down the wall communist. But yet he gets a pass, like, even from fucking libertarians. You know,
yeah, I don't
communism gets a fucking pass. Nazism doesn't. You know, a Nazi gets punched, but what if a commie got punched?
They should both be punished equally.
Well,
physically removed, so to speak. Well,
I fully believe that.
Yeah,
absolutely fucking believe.
Well,
that.
I think that if you want to be a communist, you have a right to go do it in your own community, but don't try to export it upon other or impose it upon other people. But unfortunately, for communism to survive, that's what it has to do. It has to
constantly, that's not a bug. it's not a bug, it's a feature.
Right, exactly.
Communism has to be exported.
It's built
in order
code.
For it to survive. Yeah. it's like the fucking Zerg in StarCraft. It's going to spread regardless.
I love that. I love that reference. It's perfect. Yeah, hive mind. Yeah.
Yeah, hive mind, fucking Zerg.
The collective. I mean, so.
Yeah. So, yeah. You can quote me on this. It's okay to punch a Nazi and a communist because you have to deal out punishment equally.
Well, and that's my whole thing is like, you know, I was going back and forth with, and they're like, free speech has consequences. And I'm like, well, no. Yes and no. I mean, obviously, if you yell fire, you know, I mean, yelling fire in a crowded theater. No, but if you use your free speech, you know, just to advocate unpopular or idiotic beliefs, there should not be consequences for that. I mean, because once you start doing that, it's like you said, boom.
Well, consequence and negative consequence are just consequence in general.
Right.
Because a consequence is just a reaction. Whether it be positive or negative, it's there.
It's an effect.
Well,
but the effect should not be, you know, physical violence just because you don't agree with what they're saying. You know.
No, I agree, but there's going to come a point to where that's all that's left. The idea again, this comes back to arguing via logic versus via emotion. That the punching of Richard Spencer was an argument via emotion.
Right.
It was an argument via emotion, but pretty soon that's all there's going to be because people are not well versed in the classics or the old methods of being able to of rhetoric of mm-hmm. being able to debate someone properly.
Yeah.
It all comes down to violence because that's all they know.
Well, and that's, you know, cause that's what the state at the end of the day, that's what the state does. It, you know, that's all that it has left to it to enforce it. So why wouldn't its adherents or advocates kind of follow suit? I guess.
No, I agree. I definitely agree with that assessment. They're just mirroring what the state actually does. So basically, I mean, they're using the same tactics as mm-hmm. of a state. I mean, they're state. I guess they could be considered state actors because both of them want to represent an idea of the state, whether it be the National Socialist version of the state or the communistic version of the state. You know,
right? You know what's the difference between, I guess, advocate, you know, you going and committing violence against your neighbor or advocating or supporting the government for doing it. Like, if it's okay for me to defend myself against somebody aggressing against me, why wouldn't it be okay for me to go and initiate violence against somebody who advocates in another agency for doing it? You know, if you want to follow that logic is all I'm saying. I'm not advocating that, but.
No, I agree. It's just, I'm just like, I don't know. They say the whole people advocating violence is not the same as doing violence. I agree. I mean, you're only saying words, well, and it's up, you know, and it's up to other people whether to react to those words, and that all boils down to them and their own code or ethics. You know, that's why there are a lot of people saying, and I've read a couple of videos or seen a couple of videos, read a couple of articles who's saying, yeah, Richard Spencer may be a fucking putz and advocating for, you know, a pretty shitty ideology, but let him speak it. If he's free to speak it, that means his ideas are out in the open and they're, you know, people can take it or leave it. Generally speaking, people will leave it.
Right.
And he'll end up looking like a fool.
Yeah, the marketplace of ideas.
You know? But and interfering with him and, you know, and hitting him, you're just opening a can of worms to where he can actually fight back, and it may be 10 times worse.
I like Lou Fiend's suggestion. Put the Nazis in a communist in an arena and don't let them leave until they'll fight each other to the death. Bring back gladiatorial combat.
I'm all about the Coliseum. You want to fucking do that? You know, you want to physically remove communists and Democrats, all that? You put them in an arena. You make them fight. Make them fight for their idea, and, you know, whoever comes out the winner, cool. We can then, you know,
deal with them.
Move them to their own little commune paradise.
Yeah.
Just stay the fuck away from us. You come here, we kill you.
Well,
it's that simple.
I've seen some, you know, right of defense. I've seen some interesting articles lately, especially with like the whole Cal exit, you know, California wanting to succeed, which I fully support. I support secession down to the individual level. It's virtue signaling, but
yeah, that stop that.
You know, well, for people who don't know, I mean, you know,
no,
not everybody's as ingrained or initiated as you or I, Polly.
Or brainwashed, depending on how you look at it.
Yeah, you know, echo chambered. But, you know, there's something that's going around where they advocate or they say, well, America's too big, you know, and it's not one country. It's kind of like several different regions that would actually be, you know, have their own kind of unique cultural and, you know, philosophical or whatever underpinnings. And it would be better if it was broken, you know, broken up, so to speak. Or, you know what I mean? Like the South, like they made a assumption like the South has never really considered itself a part of, you know, the rest of the country. It has its own kind of unique culture. And obviously like the Eastern Seaboard with New York and Boston with the whole, you know, plutocracy and you know, liberal authoritarianism, and you know, obviously California, because that's kind of what sparked this. But that's I don't know. That's kind of an interesting theory. You know, is America too big to not? Well, fail? No.
Yeah. Oh, it's in every empire will crumble, and then everything. Because I've been a big ad for city states, and I had already envisioned like if the empire fails, what's going to happen post, you know, imperial failure.
Right.
Well, things are going to break up, and you may see reintroduction of city states, Las Vegas being a, you know, a prime example. And I know what you're talking about is because it was that article. I forget what was the source, but it showed the map of the different regions of the cities and whatnot. I'm like, that doesn't even go far. I mean, that goes too far because that's a lot of fucking territory for each city to cover. Now, how are they going to protect that territory? No, you can basically try and protect the boundaries of your city and maybe nothing else.
Yeah, but but then people say, well, that's warlordism, or you know what I mean? Like, or feudal state, or you know, whatever, you know,
That's fine. I mean, if the fucking apocalypse were to happen, I would want to try and take as many people as I could to take and hold Hoover Dam, because that controls a vast amount of resource right there.
Yeah.
Jeez. And it's a great bargaining chip. So
hey, you
and water? You're gonna need that.
So you want a monopoly? Yeah, no, you're trying to monopolize the resource, right?
Yeah. Well, that's anyone who has access to a resource will want to try and monopolize it.
Yeah, I mean, and I'm not advocating for, you know, common ownership. You know, tragedy of the commons or anything.
But what I'm saying is even this: in a free society, resources are scarce, and there will always be a fight for resources.
Always scarce. Yeah, sure. Even in this society, right?
So here's the thing. You may be able to try to barter, but sometimes you're not going to be able to. And if you need that resource, what are you willing to do to get it?
Yep.
But yet that's never explained in, you know, a free society or people's idea of a free society. All of a sudden it's like some utopian thing where we're all going to be able to use, you know, logic and barter in terms like, no, there's someone's holding a fucking resource that you need or your family needs, and they won't trade for it. What are you going to do? And say if he's the only resource in the immediate vicinity,
Mad Max,
and you can't,
Fury Road.
There's a possibility that there's a portion of the population who will turn to something like that.
Yeah, well, that's a worst case scenario. That would obviously
it's not even a worst case scenario. It's just life. There are fucking tribes, or whether they be Vikings, natives, you know, Navajo, Apache, whatever. Tribes fought each other. There was no fucking unity. I mean,
they fought each other when they had to, but then, you know, obviously.
Well, right. But, when they had to, but then they also traded and whatnot. Right.
So I think it's kind of, you know, I'd like to think, obviously human nature is what it is, but I like to think as we kind of progress, you know, you mentioned like transhumanism and, obviously, advances in technology, I like to think we kind of are getting past the need for that kind of, you know, warfare or tribalism, you know.
You know, it would be nice, but in reality, you still have to look at human nature. Now, there's a large segment of the population who would abide by that. But then there's still that segment who doesn't,
right.
Who thrives on warfare and all that. So,
well, there's ways to deal with them. Put them in the Thunderdome.
You gotta capture them first, and I hope you got a big enough net or a big enough wall to encircle.
Yeah, there you go. Build the wall. As long as I've got some dudes playing flaming guitars, man, we're good. I think that was a
great fucking scene. I love that.
So good, man.
They built all those cars from scratch, right?
Really? No, I didn't dig that deep, but I could totally see it.
So Mad Max was competing with the Avengers or with Age of Ultron. I don't know what the release date was.
Release time,
like,
yeah.
But it was competing for the summer blockbuster. And the reason why so many people love Mad Max, because it was all legit. It all looked real. There was hardly any green screen.
Yeah. No, it was gritty, man. Yeah. It was very visceral. Yeah, absolutely.
And then people are saying, well, it wasn't about Max. I'm like, no, it's about Furiosa. But what movie was about Max except for the first one?
Right.
Second, you know, those two weren't really about him. It was about him in an area and just kind of what he was dealing with.
It was more of the environment or the reality of it. Yeah, it was more of the focus than
it was just showing. Okay, it was showing Max trying to survive in this new world. And the idea was, look, this is how he's surviving. He's coming into contact with these other people. But it wasn't about him or his like redemption or trying to, you know, no, it's just about him surviving and what happened in his story.
Yep. So speaking of Vegas or Matt, well, I guess that's every time I think of like post-apocalyptic or Mad Max shit, I think of Vegas. I don't know why.
Maybe New Vegas
or New Vegas or The Stand. I don't know if you ever read The Stand by Stephen King or.
No, yeah, I haven't. I heard it's great.
One of the camps, they set up in Vegas, but it's better than what do you got going on, dude? With don't you have something that you're kind of working on, Liberty?
Yeah, okay, yeah. So Jim Jesus and I, we started Liberty in the Pub, which is supposed to be kind of a subsidiary or our own version of Liberty on the Rocks. That was going on for a while until the Liberty on the Rocks people actually got a hold of Jim. And said, yeah, go ahead and make your own chapter. So we turned Liberty in the Pub to Liberty in the Rocks, Las Vegas.
Nice.
And we have we've got one meetup that takes place every third Tuesday at the Aces and L's Bistro in Northwest Vegas.
Cool.
Now, my work schedule does not permit me going to these meetings. So now I told Jim that I'm doing a spinoff and I'm doing my own thing for Liberty on the Rocks at the Aces and L's on the east side of town.
Right on.
So because I've been working so much, I haven't had much time to plan it, but this month, the month of February is when I'm actually going to launch it. And so we're going to have two days. One's going to be on the third Tuesday. And then I think either the second or third Saturday for mine, but they're both held at Aces and Nails, both in the Northwest and the East.
Right on, man. Very cool. Yeah. Yeah. Dude, so, I would love to do something like that too, but like with you, my schedule's kind of prohibitive of it. So
yeah, I was going to say shit. If you and your family are up in the Vegas area, let me know.
You and Jim would be the first people I'll come drink a beer with.
Oh fuck yeah.
For sure.
And they got, well, here's the problem. Aces and Nails are the only place because I'm a huge stout fan. In Vegas, they have nothing but shitty ass, like IPAs, hoppy beer, all that bullshit.
Why not both?
Because it's really fucking difficult for some reason. Because a lot of, I mean, IPAs, American IPAs are well, and for again some reason, there's hardly any of that here unless you go to like a specialty liquor store or whatnot. So that's why I decided to start planning and putting together my business plan for Stormhaven Brewing. Which is going to be probably a lot of stouts, maybe a couple IPAs, but
nice,
we'll see
man.
How that goes.
No, dude, I mean, I love IPAs, but dude, I love stouts too, man.
Stouts are my go-to.
What, you got a favorite?
Let's see.
At the moment, they always change, right?
A good stout, yeah. Good oatmeal stout. Actually, I'd have to say mine because I came up with this recipe where I tweaked a little bit, added a little bit more molasses, some brown sugar. And I tweaked the recipe from like 6.5 to like 8.5 ABV.
Wow, nice.
Yeah.
Cool, man. Well, I hope I'll be drinking some with you someday, brother.
Oh, definitely. If we go to Jackfest, I'm definitely bringing some.
I'm planning on it, so yeah.
Okay. Oh, real quick, let me get back to it because you want to ask me about the Barony, right?
Yeah, okay. Dude, because that kind of ties into
it ties into
apocalyptic. At least you have your own. You know, you can bring your own beer on your Barony.
Oh fuck yeah! Well, the whole idea was because I'm really into Marvel comics, and when I was thinking of this, I was working at the Target warehouse down in Tucson, so I was killing time thinking, you know, certain things. I was playing this Marvel game, and I also play a lot of D&D. So I'm like, well, it's interesting why, you know, that Dr. Doom, he has, you know, Marvel is known for creating fictitious countries or whatnot. Latavia for Dr. Right. Doom, that's his own, you know.
Then Wakanda, Wakanda,
yeah. So I'm like, well, why not I do that? Why not I create my own thing and just kind of throw a backstory with it? You know, because no one in the libertarian, you know, liberty community is actually doing something like this. I'm like, okay, let me be the first one. But I need to come up with a name. I need to be proper. You know, need to be a proper ruler, kind of like, you know.
Yes.
Doom, you know, Dr. Doom, he's a count, I think. Or
yeah,
you know,
he had some title.
Uh-huh. He has a title, yeah, yeah, okay. So let me look at, you know, is it possible for me? You know, so I came up with Stormhaven. I'm like, all right, it's cool. Name. So this is thank you. So this is my thing. The Barony of Stormhaven. Okay, now I need to find out if I can actually become a legitimate Baron. So I started doing research.
Not a robber Baron.
No, not a robber Baron.
A legitimate one, yeah.
A legitimate, you know, land-owning Baron. I'm like, okay, well, I found a place I could do it. I bought the title, and then it's just run it from there.
Nice, man.
So, very yeah, cool. Yeah, so right now, basically the whole idea was, you know, I was going to try and offer this whole – or kind of float the idea of e-citizenship, see if people would be interested or whatnot. But that idea pretty much died because I couldn't justify doing anything because I was always thinking of the counter arguments mm-hmm. as to why people wouldn't want to join. So I'm like, yeah, I can think of more cons than I could pros. So I dropped the idea, but I kept, you know, the idea of the Barony and everything else. So wherever I am is technically the Barony of Stormhaven. Is because I claim wherever I am, since I am the Baron, I am the Barony. You know,
right?
It's wherever I go.
As long as you're not on other private property. No, I'm just kidding.
I'm just kidding. Well, it's like even that. Well, yeah, no, I mean, if I'm just. I mean, for even comical purposes, I mean, fuck my router, my Wi-Fi is. You know, you look up if you come into my neighborhood, you look up Wi-Fi, you're going to find the Barony of Stormhaven. You'll find me.
That's so awesome, man. Very cool, brother. Well, I think you want to talk about anything else, man, or I think.
Nah, I'm pretty much
on its course here.
Yeah, I'm dead. I'm tired.
Yeah, you've been at work all day, brother. I'll let you go, man. But hey, brother, thanks for being on, man. This was a blast.
I think. Oh, definitely, dude.
Cool shit.
Definitely, and I would love to come back on whenever.
Dude, anytime, man. Open invite. So I'd love to have you on regularly.
Hey, I'm.
If I can stay away from Jim, you know. No,
I'm willing to do both. I mean, because the way Jim does it is like he's got a rotating cast of six.
Yeah,
he's got six co-hosts. Mm-hmm. I even offer him like, dude, I can do this, you know, full time. You know, we can do it. He's like, nah, it's like, you know, I'd rather just do it. You'd rather do something like The Fiends, which I'm cool with.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, if you definitely want to do this again, let me know.
Dude, I'm down, man. Absolutely.
All right, brother.
All right, Baron. Thanks for being on, man. This is the ZGY Zombies Government and You podcast. We'll see ya.
Peace.
Later.
Cell 411 is a free app for Android and iOS that replaces government-controlled 911. Cell 411 allows you to preset a group of friends or private organizations to show up in any emergency. Cell 411 is a nightmare for the state because it proves their so-called services aren't needed. Cell 411 has had thousands of installs, and of course it's covered by the BIPCOT No Government License. Cell 411 because your friends won't shoot you when you're in trouble. Without the government, who would build the emergency services? You and Cell 411. Get it today at getcell411.com. That's getcell411.com.